The theater. The theater.
Bring out Louis.
Theater. Theater.
To be or not to be.
Theater. Theater.
Friends.
Hello. Happy New Year.
Happy Merry New Year. Year.
Yes. It took us a while to get this one out. We're doing it. We're doing it.
Yeah.
The holidays happened. Family,
holidays,
travel, all that shit.
Oh my God. It was like a tidal wave. You could just see it cresting and crushing us.
Yeah, but I'm glad we're doing it. But technically, this is the final episode of season 4.
Yes. Yes.
And the first episode of season 5.
Kinda.
No, we're here to talk about Problem Players, which we'll introduce in a second. But I have something I have to redact.
Give it.
From last episode.
Give it.
Okay. So I was we were talking about Cymbeline.
Mm-hmm.
Cymbeline.
Good play.
Uh-huh.
Very good play.
We all agreed, I think,
yes.
Right? Yeah. So I said at the beginning that Shakespeare Youth Festival and the Los Angeles Drama Club have never performed Cymbeline and that we might someday.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
This is untrue.
Okay.
We have done Cymbeline 2 different times.
Like
now,
since you've been there?
No. What? Well, one since I've been there, yes.
Okay, okay,
now,
okay.
Now, I was directing Henry IV, part 1 and 2, during that. So I was not like... even remotely, like,
which age group of kids were doing Cymbeline?
The younger crew.
Well,
cute. It was more like it was like the middle crew. So we used to, it was kind of like we still do it. Like, we'll have it this year. There's like a more veteran to younger group doing Julius Caesar this year.
Cool.
And then like the newer kids are doing The Tempest, right?
Cute. All right. Then, yeah.
But it's like the kind of the younger crew. So Cymbeline was going on. With like up to 14-year-olds, I think.
Hmm.
And it got a write-up in the LA Times.
No shit.
It was like a big deal.
That's
I'm gonna
cool.
put the link in the show notes because it's actually
it.
A really good article. But our artistic director, Julia Weissen, who we love, we stan, who we have
Julia.
To get on the pod, honestly. That it's a
please.
It's messed up that we haven't done that yet. But she is the new artistic director of the Shakespeare Youth Festival, and she was listening to our episodes and was enjoying them. She
oh,
says
good.
She has a problem though, because while she listens, she wants to speak back to us.
Which is why she should get on here.
She needs to get on here.
Yes,
so
yes.
We'll get her on here. But she was listening to the Cymbeline episode and texted me right away, like, okay, dude, I'm insisting you redact this. We've done it twice. And then she goes on to she sent me the actual the LA Times link and then kind of listed how amazing it was. And it says, our concept was wacky, winking actors putting a show on meta theme that Scott described.
Cool.
All right.
So apparently what you described in Cymbeline as like your, what you think would be the best Cymbeline, she was like, no, that's what we did. We did that.
Oh,
that's
word. All right.
Scott
well,
was actually one of the kids in the production.
I was. I dressed up.
Scott was in
I
the
dressed up.
Festival.
I used a fake ID.
Exactly. Can you get a fake ID to make you look even younger?
did y'all join the mob when you saw Henry the VI? Or no? Do you remember?
We didn't.
We
I don't
didn't.
Think we did.
Okay. No.
Okay.
We were pretty high.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
No, it was rad. That was
okay,
a great
good.
Fucking day.
We had a great day
yeah.
that
we had
day.
A really great time.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the
kids
at
were
the
just
convent.
Phenomenal. At the convent. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this year we're performing at the Hudson, and it's going to be amazing. And I'm super
I can't
excited
wait.
About
like
it.
Like I said, I can walk there.
Yeah. Yeah, right. And there. I'm directing The Tempest, and it's... And Richard II. I'm working on Richard II with Julia, but I'm directing The Tempest, and it's
can't
yeah.
wait. When core. Is that? What months are those?
I love it. It runs all of March. At the
oh, okay,
Hudson.
Cool, cool, cool.
At the
okay.
same time as the Saw musical parody, which will be running at the same time.
Don't go to the wrong show.
That.
Make sure you go through the right door on that
exactly.
night, because the wrong door is going to mess you up real bad.
But either way, you'll be seeing some theater.
Hell yeah.
Speaking of.
Yeah.
For the last time of season 4. And probably the last time we'll ever do this intro, and we'll tell you why later.
Mm.
Welcome to Theater Theater, the theater podcast for theater nerds made by 3 theater makers from the LA theater scene. I'm Jay Bailey Burcham.
I'm CJ Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett.
And each week we get together to discuss and debate the definition of theater through various lenses.
Yay.
Yes.
Yeah. And this week is the end of an era. It is also the end of a miniseries covering the problem plays of Shakespeare.
Billion. I've been waiting so long to do these.
They're you have. Right. I feel like you've brought it up every time we've even, like, Shakespeare's even been mentioned. We're like, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, you're like, problem.
Fuck that, the problem plays. That's what I want to do.
The problem plays.
Which is great. That. I think that's how it
and
should be.
And I have to say, doing this series, it has reminded me they are, in fact, my favorite.
Yeah, they rule.
They're great. They're weird.
Yeah.
I can't wait to know what y'all rank these 3 as. That'll
yeah.
be.
Ooh, yeah, it's gonna be tough. For the end, it's gonna be tough.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited about that. Okay, this week we're talking about The Winter's Tale.
Mm-hmm.
Or the if Winter's... Brandon Jacobs Jenkins wrote it, A Winter's Tale.
Yeah, right.
Well, if you like Scott said, if you look up Winter's Tale, you start find a Winter's Tale, you start finding all the wrong things.
Yeah, yes. It's a wrong. There's like a Canadian concept album from like the 70s. It's called A Winter's Tale. I don't even remember the band, and it has nothing to do with the Shakespeare play either.
There's a bad Colin Farrell movie.
Oh,
you know what I'm talking about.
No, I've never seen it, but I know what you're talking about.
Russell Crowe, Colin Farrell. Yeah, it's bad. Not worth anyone's time.
It's bad.
Yeah.
It's bad. but this is a play that Shakespeare Youth Festival has done multiple times. In fact, I saw it years ago. When they were performing it, and I was directing The Tempest, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Star of Say Anything, Ione Skye's daughter was in the production.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Who which is exciting.
That would make them the grandchild of folk singer Donovan.
Huh.
There you go. Ione Skye is Donovan's daughter. Yeah.
Wow. Well, radical.
Yeah.
Ione Skye, my first crush, maybe, like, oof. You know, in my, like,
yeah,
or, well, not that. Maybe first. First might have been, like, Topanga.
Sure, 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 sure.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Of course.
But you know, an early love for sure. I probably shouldn't speak that way about the parent of a student, of a past student, but that's okay. No, that's funny. It's funny. Is it funny? I don't know.
I don't think it's that bad.
You guys are like looking at me like, yeah,
you're
stop.
Crush on
you
someone
doing
that's...
it.
It's fine.
Yeah, you weren't inappropriate at all.
You guys are like shaking your head like, yeah, Bailey, cut it off.
I've had crushes on plenty of the parents of the kids that I used to teach up at YDC.
Whoa!
So.
Whoa
names.
Plenty
we
of
names.
Them.
It's been 15 years. 15 years. So
yeah, but no, Shakespeare Youth Fest has done it multiple times. In fact, I saw it 2 or 3 years ago, and it was why I came back, because I took a couple years off after COVID, and I was like, I just need a couple seasons. And then, because it was such a heartbreak when we had to shut down the week of Tech Week for COVID.
Yeah, that story is just...
And then I did one show in Zoom form, and I was like, I can't do it anymore.
Can't do
and
it.
So I took a couple seasons off, but I came back and I saw Winter's Tale, and I was like, this is awesome. You guys are back in action. Let's go. And so I came back, and now I'm, you know, fully integrated into the place with this new position. So I love Winter's Tale. On reread, remembered that there is a movie version of this. That's kind of old, and I'm going to look it up right now because I can't remember who's in it. But what is y'all's relationship with the Winter's Tale? Winter's Tale.
For me, I had never even remotely interacted with this once. It's just been a blind spot in my Shakespeare, in my theater experience, but it's one that a million people have talked about in front of me. And I knew about a statue becoming a person, and that was it. And I just knew that a lot of people love this play. So that's my context.
Yeah, I had read it in college, and it was taught and presented to me as it was the first Shakespeare problem play, quote unquote, that I was exposed to, and I studied it twice. I studied my Shakespeare lit class, and then as dramatic analysis, and had two really great, very different teachers sort of bring it to life in a way of, like, literally, like, and I've talked about this many times when we've talked about Shakespeare, just physically looking at the page, physically looking at the text, and seeing that he was trying to cram more in there, that he was trying to play around with it. And then I got to see a production in the mid-90s at Alabama Shakespeare Festival.
Ooh, that's a place to see some Shakespeare.
And it was, I remember it being okay. Like, but then I did some research and watched a Royal Shakespeare version with Anthony Shearer that had a great documentary accompanying it. And we'll talk about that because it really changed how I thought about this play and maybe how I look at Shakespeare as a whole, or at least approaching it as an actor. And we'll get into more of that as we go.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about you? Well, we've already covered your experience, Bales. When did you first ever see it or read it?
I think it might have been at Shakespeare Youth Festival, actually. Long ago. I, you know, it's one of those that people do monologues from it.
Yeah.
And you see scenes from it sometimes, and you're always sort of like, huh, what's that play? And you never get to it.
Right.
And I guess it's not like it's a lesser known Shakespeare. It's not like it's one that, I guess it's not performed a lot.
Certainly in comparison, you know, and I think that a lot of that has to do with, it's a hard fucking play.
It is really hard.
The tonal shifts
it's
are
difficult.
Hard. The big theatrical elements are hard. Hard. We should talk about, you know, Exit Pursued by a Bear,
which
is probably the most famous, you know, direction in history. And the director of the Royal Shakespeare version in the documentary watched he said, the problem isn't the bear exiting. It's the problem is enter a bear. Like, how do you how do you do that? And they accomplish it really dramatically and theatrically and all that. But I think that that's why it's a really hard. There's two or three moments in the play that are like, fuck, I can't figure out how to do any of these three things. So I don't even have time to start addressing the actual drama and story as much. You know, it's hard because you have to really tackle some layers of stuff to make it work, to make it vibrant, or otherwise it can just be a long slog.
Well, Scott, do you have a Scottopedia on this or not really? Because we did one at the beginning of
specifically on this
remember.
One yeah no
well I just I know tricks. It was believed to have been performed in 1611.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's
which is about
date.
5 years before Shakespeare passes.
Yeah, and he's in his late 40s at this point, which becomes important because so is Leontes. And there's some things that I've discovered that I was like, so.
Yeah, and I mean, this might be the most, the epitome of problem play, for it is both, I mean, it is a romance, a comedy, a tragedy, like all elements are represented here.
Oh yeah.
I think it's balanced in a really like pleasurable Western plot telling type of way though. Like the way that the comedy and the drama is balanced. And in my opinion,
that's what the actors in this documentary were also talking about. That it's like, as you delved into it, there are these hard turns, but once you make that turn, then you're in the lane, so
you're rewarded.
And the balance of all those elements does work out nicely. It's a very satisfying end to a play.
It is.
To this play in particular.
Yeah. I agree. It's set in Bohemia and
Sicilia.
And Sicily? I've been working on, I'm not going to go into any of this because it's not worth it, but I have been working on a script that's set in Palermo, Sicily.
Oh,
and so I look up pictures of it a lot. So I know what it looks like. It's very beautiful. It's really, really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, what do we want to get into? I mean, what?
Do y'all want to know what happens?
Oh, shit. Forget. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
You got to throw it down. You got to throw the gauntlet.
I just threw it the fuck down.
Oh, my God.
CJ's breakdown.
Everything is hunky-dory between the kingdoms of Sicilia and Bohemia. That is, until King Leontes of Sicilia is convinced that his wife, Queen Hermione, must be cheating on him with King Polixenes of Bohemia. Bohemia. Good, CJ.
Well.
paging Dr. Freud. Paging
problem
Dr.
Play.
Sigmund Freud.
Problem play.
Shakespeare writes a play about eating disorders. Okay, I'm going to start over.
CJ's breakdown.
Everything is hunky-dory between the kingdoms of Sicilia and Bohemia. That is, until King Leontes of Sicilia is convinced that his wife, Queen Hermione, must be cheating on him with King Polixenes of Bohemia. He convinces his right-hand man, Camillo, to assassinate Polixenes, his faithful friend of a couple decades. Camillo tells Polixenes what's going on, and both flee to Bohemia. Queen Hermione is thrown in jail where she gives birth to their daughter, Perdita. When Leontes is presented with the wee bairn by Paulina, Perdita is immediately cast out of the kingdom. Hermione is put on trial, even though the king's court, Paulina, and even Apollo says she's innocent. She is still found guilty, immediately casting the country of Sicilia in mourning as the heir to the throne, as well as Hermione, dies. But wait! We go 16 years later, and you get to find out just exactly how everything shakes out. Yeah. Disguised love, shepherds, sheep shearing festivals, and mending friendships? Oh my. Oh, and you also get to finally read the line, exit, pursued by a bear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very fun.
These fucking breakdowns for these problem plays have been something else. But they've been a pleasure to kind of cobble together.
Yeah, you can feel him going, Shakespeare going, you know what? I just don't give a fuck anymore. I'm changing up stuff. I'm going to do it different. Because the play is borrowed from a pastoral novella, but then he takes all the rules of that and he kind of throws a lot of them out the window. And a lot of his own rules, a lot of rules that we would go, oh, those are Shakespearean rules. And he kind of goes, I can change it up. And it really deals with a lot of different levels of perception. It's perception, isn't it? It's one person seeing one thing and another person not understanding that. And then, you know, flipped identities and all that. That just make it cool. Leontes' breakdown is trippy because it's heavy, you know? And that was one of the things I really enjoyed about listening to this documentary with Anthony Scheer, who's probably one of the great preparers, did great prep work of acting. But he literally went to shrinks trying to get a grasp on why does Leontes lose his shit with his best friend and his wife that there's never been... any indication.
And Easter egg, Anthony Scheer is the shrink in Shakespeare in Love.
In Shakespeare in Love, correct. But
it's probably on purpose.
And these psychoanalysts were basically like, it sounds like morbid jealousy. Yeah. And that's an actual psychological condition.
It sounds like he's the cheater to me. Like, I read that. I was like, he's the one cheating. Cheaters?
No,
always
he
think
doesn't.
The other person's cheating.
He's the problem.
But
yeah, he is.
Play.
No, it's because he loves her so much that that's what that makes it even crazier. But this is a legit condition that exists in men in their 40s, and it should say displays itself in men in their 40s and women in their late 20s or early 30s. Just losing your fucking mind with jealousy that you can't attribute to anything. Right. And it's based on mostly all kinds of, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Just inconsistencies with self, you know, self-doubt, a lot of it.
Sure.
So, like, Anthony Scheer said that that his first take was that the relationship between Leontes and Polixes was that they were best friends all growing up, but Polixes was always probably the one who was just a little bit better at games and sports. Maybe did just a little bit better with the girls. And so that from the beginning, as he walks on stage, he's already offset, and then it doesn't take much pushing for him to lose his shit, which is why he's also able to recover from it. Because you recover from it, you eventually go, you catch yourself, because it's not a pure psychosis, but you eventually catch yourself and go, oh fuck. But the damage is already done. You've already, you know, and so I just thought it was a really interesting take, because what it did, and when you see the production, is it grounds it so hardcore. And I always read this play as a little fluffy, despite its darkness. The characters always seemed a little fluffy to me. And by just putting it, like, on terra firma, made everything else work. Then you have some place to go, and you have the turns to make. So, I'm sorry, I went on a tangent rant tangent there.
I feel like this one, while I realized Tempest and Midsummer and plays like that probably fit the bill a little bit more, this one felt even more so like a fairy tale to me.
Sure.
Very much, yeah. And that's kind of a theme about it. Like, they said that the audience would have gone in back in the day and realized that this was already going to be, just from the title, that it was going to be not real.
It would almost be fun to, like, style it, production design it almost like Once Upon a Mattress. Like, go full blown, like cartoon that. With it. Like,
yeah,
that
yeah.
would be fun. Like you're saying, Siege, like, make it really not cartoon, that's not what I mean, but like, give it some animation feel, right? Give
yeah,
it that
over the top,
fairy
not realistic.
Tale book, non realistic, mm-hmm. like, storybook type feel. I think you're right. I think that could be really cool.
Well, and you meet so many different levels of people in this. You've got the kings and the queens, and then you've got, like, the shepherds and
the peons.
Yeah, all of the people below that, which is kind of fun.
Hermione
yeah.
is a name that mm-hmm. you don't hear very often.
No, that is a
but it's
name.
Here, and
did
it's
it originate
in
here?
Harry Potter.
No.
Well, yes.
obviously. But yeah, I was wondering, that's kind of what I was asking.
No, I think it's older than that. I think it's a Greek Roman name.
Oh yeah, that I guess that sounds about right.
It's ancient Greek, derived of Hermes. Hermione yeah. was the daughter of Menelaus and Helen in Greek mythology.
Boy, yeah. you think I would know that, but I guess not.
Also the name of an early Christian martyr, Hermione of Ephesus.
What happened to her?
And a character in William Shakespeare's The Winter's Tale.
Yeah.
All right.
Hermione of Ephesus.
Ephesus.
Anyway, sorry, I just thought that was interesting.
She is one of my favorite lines in this, and it just goes with my underlying bitterness lately, but I love the line that she says to Leontes, "I never wish to see you sorry. Now I trust I shall." I want to, like... tattoo that on my forehead.
Put it on your fucking forehead. I'll pay for it.
On my fucking forehead.
I'll pay for it.
Oh, this just popped up in my notes, but another name, Perdita, means she who was lost.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nar.
Let's see what Leontes means.
Oh my God, what do they all mean?
What does it all mean?
This is also just because I haven't experienced all of the Shakespeares in any particular way. This one has a big time jump, which made me think of Pericles, which I'm still sad we haven't covered in any way, shape, or form, because I love it so much. Are there other Shakespeares that do time jumps like this?
This is a made-up ass name by Shakespeare.
What is?
Leontes.
Oh, it's a good name.
King Leontes.
Are there other Shakespeares that time hop like this?
I can't. Not that I come to my head. Beyond like a reasonable passage of time, you mm-hmm. know, a couple days or something. Not that I can think of. None of the histories do.
That do time jumps?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like this. Oh. That are
and
like,
Pericles.
Not this massive, I don't think. 16 yeah. years.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. Is
but
there...
like months go by.
Sure,
like,
sure,
in,
sure.
Especially
sure.
in the histories I mean... where it's like a year has passed.
Yeah, and yeah. Then, no, no, no. I mean like years. Mm-hmm. Because this is, and this brings on another question, because I've never worked on this before. Does this, is this a play where there is a question of getting two different actors for some of the characters? Because when I saw Pericles at the Globe, they had two different Pericles for the time jump, which the time jump on that might have been more than 16 years. I can't remember, but they had a younger man and an old man play Pericles in it.
No, I think that the trick with that is that Hermione has to, she ages, and they talk about this, the statue looks aged. Look at how great this sculpture is, because they aged the sculpture to make her look like what she would look like today. So if you don't have the same actress playing Hermione at the beginning as you do at the end, then that can be complicated with the statue and the whole concept
but
of the
I guess
statue.
You'd have to age more than I mean Pericles, it was just one guy. I guess you'd have to age more people in this, and you'd have to do both of the kings, and you'd have to do Camillo or whatever,
Paulina and
yeah Paulina yeah. and yeah okay never silly yeah. question
no not at all, there are no silly questions,
only silly actors.
I'm a silly actor.
What is that? What am I mixing up? Oh, small parts, small actors.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, it's all the same shit. Same shit, different toilet.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a lot of verse in this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Actually, more than I remembered.
Yeah.
Like from I think a good production does well not to hit the verse
sure.
too hard.
Sure.
Yeah. Right. And so maybe that's why. But while reading it, I found myself kind of falling into.
Yeah.
Well, but there's a lot.
Yeah. And I think that goes back to this whole idea of him pushing his structure and his form.
Yeah.
Because there are a few where you look at it on the page and like, that's way more. That's too many. That's too many syllables, and you're like, no, he got it.
Yeah, there's a good amount of like feminine endings and things though in here.
Yes, mm-hmm. yeah.
There's a lot of you know hangovers. There's a lot of you know where you're kind of like, oh, that doesn't fit. That's on purpose.
Yes, ah, he's telling me something.
What was it? Because when we got into the whole math of iambic pentameter, like our teacher said, like, well, when it's this kind of a thing, that means that the character is doing this, and I thought. I remembered, like, the lines that end with feminine endings means that they're working through something. Like, sure. they're thinking.
Sure.
I think. Is that correct?
I mean, yeah, it can mean a lot of things, but I think thematically, yes, that there tends to be, or that what they're saying, I don't know. Let me look it up. This is interesting. I haven't thought about this in a long time.
I loved shit like that about Shakespeare, because it's like, even if you can't get there emotionally, mathematically, it's there for you.
Yeah.
You just got to follow the verse and know what you're doing. That's why I still get into scanning things out, because I love it.
Yeah. In the documentary that I watched, the actress playing Paulina talks about in this scene where she gets in his face a lot. She's the only one that kind of...
She's a badass character.
Yeah, that challenges him. And... But she's got a series of lines where she repeats a word over and over again, and mm-hmm. Shakespeare repeats it. And she was like, wow. She's like, it was so clearly a direction from him you know, going back 400 years. They just very clearly going, do this. This is how you say this line.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it doesn't take much to figure it out. You know, she was like, sometimes you just don't need to think about it too much. He gives you so much. I mean, that's why.
Well, and the one that I remember for sure is lines that start with a stressed syllable. That's when people are fucking mad and emotional can't control it.
Right.
That was one thing I remember for sure. Did you find anything, Bailey?
Yeah. So, specifically to be or not to be, speech is like mostly feminine endings.
Well, okay.
To be or not to be, that is the question.
Yeah, he's thadging shit out. We're
in the mind to suffer.
Hell fucking yeah, I love that.
The slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. Or to take arms against a sea of troubles.
I love it.
Yeah, it's nice. But then when he doesn't, and by opposing, end them to die, to sleep. Except and is not a double. So that, yeah, it breaks the verse. But yeah, there's a lot of examples here. We can find the use of feminine endings when the bard, let's see, this is a stupid site. I don't know why I'm looking at this. the thing is that there's no true answer because it's used so well. It's used in so many different places. All the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
They have their exits and their entrances. I'm reading it stupidly, obviously. This is not how we perform it. But do y'all scan? Have we talked about this?
I love scanning.
You scan?
Like if I'm doing a speech, of course, it's been a while since I've done a Shakespeare show. It's been quite a bit. But like particularly when I'm working on a speech, yeah, I scan the shit out of that stuff. I love it.
Yeah, yeah. You got to have it.
My lexicons that I use. Like I fucking love it.
The kids, I usually, are good at it. What I like to do is sort of attack it and see how it just feels without, and then do the scanning, then do the math and see if it's feeling right in comparison. I just found that personally, I sort of like to mold the lump of clay rather than build on it.
Yeah. I like to be directed. I like to be told what to do.
Uh-huh.
Personally,
yeah, you do.
We could listen.
Go to Wendy's for me right now, CJ. Could you go get me a triple baconator?
Sorry. Ooh, that sounds really good.
Right.
Okay, so I think that there's something I wrote in my notes that, and then I told myself I was going to come up with examples, and I didn't. So I'm just going to ask y'all if you can think of any. This sort of falls into the category of story / like, I feel like there's a lot of movies and plays like this where someone in a Christmas Carol type way goes through enough suffering that not Christmas Carol is not the right way to put it, but like goes through enough suffering that they have a change of heart or begin having compassion or start forgiving people what are other movies that fit into this? Because I know there's a billion, but like, or stories, not necessarily just movies.
Yeah, I mean, just thematically in terms of sort of that redemption stuff. Pulp Fiction's the first thing that comes to mind. Everybody who makes a step to redeem themselves or make peace with somebody survives. Everybody who doesn't or is unaware,
they have to suffer first.
I've got a good one. Yeah. Bruce Willis, Jojo Rabbit. Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
Okay. But no, I mean, that's just one of the great themes, you know. I'm trying to think of
it weirdly, and I'm thinking of a different storyline from the show. I was thinking Ever After, like somebody that's lost, that's like fucked over, that is found in the end and lives happily ever after type of thing.
Sure, sure. I think a lot of people would call this Leontes' story.
Yes, absolutely.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
And so I'm just thinking of like, and I know there's got to be like a Nick Cage movie or something where they just suffer so much that they end up like coming out the other end like, okay. Like there's got to be a Nick Cage performance. There's got to be a Jack Nicholson performance. There's got to be, you know, like one
as
of those.
As good as it gets?
Maybe.
Yeah.
But like, does
well,
he
I mean, leaving Las Vegas.
End?
I mean, leaving Las Vegas is
okay. Okay.
Is sort of. I mean, it's so brutal and tragic, but he goes through those that sort of through hell in order to find some sort of peace and solace, in order to help her move on, help Elizabeth Shue's character move on, and then, you know, reckoning with his own self, his own demise.
At the end of Gladiator, does he kill Joaquin?
Yes, he does.
Well, then never mind.
They both die at the end.
Yeah, and it's not that one. I'm looking at my movie collection like, there's gotta be one. If you're listening and you can think of any, please send me in some. Because I know this is like a genre, right? Of you go through enough of something that by the end you can't help but like forgive all the wrongs against you.
Everything, everywhere, all at once.
Yeah.
I just want to talk about that
That's
movie.
That's more call to adventure
so
than it is like suffer, though. Yeah, I don't know. I'll find it. It's got to be like a Lars von Trier movie or something. I'm going to find it. Find it. Anyway, feminine endings. I'm glad we talked about that. I'm glad that came up. I'm just closing
Lars von Trier. Breaking the Waves, arguably.
You're right.
Emily Watson goes, I mean, is... Oof,
the hell and back.
God damn. Yeah, and then she's good with everybody at the end.
What else do we want to talk about?
I wanted to ask, again, as I have never interacted with this before in any way, how have people handled the statue to human situation at the end? Certainly, I'm sure it's much easier in film.
I mean,
wondering if you've seen something live that did something cool.
The production I saw was a woman standing still with makeup on.
I guess it's not that long, because I thought about, I think someone mentioned someone being on stage and just being very still. And I'm like, that would be fucking hard.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard to be dead on stage for a long time.
Yeah.
There is a filmed version of The Winter's Tale on Marquee TV, and I think it must be... It's not Royal Shakespeare, but something like that. I'm going to watch it because it has a really high budget and I want to see what they do. Mm-hmm. Because like the Tempest that's on there uses like holograms and stuff. It looks really good. So I want to see what they do. Because there might be something interesting there. But no, I've only ever seen it as people standing in makeup.
Mm-hmm. I think I heard someone talk about the statue initially being behind the statue, quote unquote, initially being behind some kind of like scrim or screen. So like,
sure,
you're standing still, but maybe you're saved a little bit because people can't.
That's always been my instinct, is to use a scrim, that it's a shadow image, and then to use a lot of shadow, like a lot of harsh shadows with everybody else. Then when it comes to life, then you add the color, you fill out the lights and the sort of pastoral image of everybody being happy at the end and them coming down is an option. You keep it behind a thing and then it is unveiled to the gathering crowd. I mean, it's a challenge. Again, it's a challenge, and you have to really, you know, I think if you're going to do this as a full production, you know, especially if a major theater is doing it, then you should really think about those bells and whistles and how you're going to make that happen.
Well, and that's, I feel like anyone that even remotely knows this play will be like, well, I wonder what they're going to do. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
sure,
this is, that'll be the moment that people are waiting for.
I mean, that's why
in the audience,
people go to see Shakespeare, is to see how they handle this moment.
Because
when I was in undergrad and we did, you know,
when I was in
Richard
undergrad.
The 19th, I remember.
Maybe it was because it was my first time reading it, but I was really over the character of Autolycus.
Autolycus?
Yeah, is that how you say his name?
Antigonus.
He's like the double crosser that keeps showing up and lucking into stuff, and I don't know.
Oh, yeah, Autolycus. Yeah. Sure.
Well, you know, what's interesting is there's characters on sort of both moral sides of this.
Sure.
Like Camillo. Camillo's, like, from the outset, he's, like, one of the ones who's like, ah, he's just a good person. He's like, no,
he's
I'm not
going to. Benvolio.
Yeah, I'm not going to poison this motherfucker. I'm gonna, yeah. I'm not going to drown this baby. Or, well, yeah. He doesn't drown it. Who drowns the baby?
Nobody does. He gives it to the guy that gets eaten by the bear. Paulina's husband. What's his damn
Antigonus.
Name?
Antigonus.
Antigonus.
It's my guy.
That's it. It's yes,
good,
yes.
It's a good name.
It's my guy.
There's a lot of good names.
Dude.
In this play.
Who's your guy? Antigonus. Right on, bro. Yeah.
Yeah. He's my guy. He's my noble man.
He's my noble man.
He's my noble man.
Stop it, you fucking theater nerd. I love it. I'm going to start using that.
Two phenomenal roles to get in this one, the shepherd and the clown.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously
yeah.
is great and memorable. I mean, it's the one everyone always walks away kind of talking about. It's always, you know, hilarious. Mm-hmm.
Well, and the sheep herding festival. Like, yeah. what a great gift to a director or to production to be able to redo that and have fun with it. And you can really do a lot with it. With music you can and yeah. Fun
all
stuff.
The sheep on stage.
All them sheeps on stage getting sheared. I'd do that. You could shear me on stage. I'll play a sheep.
Did I ever tell y'all my first role that I ever played was a sheep? My parents enrolled me. I think I was 5 years old. And my parents enrolled me in it was a little summer theater thing. And we picked... There was a couple different age groups, and I was in the 5 and 6 year olds, and we had each had to pick a fable. Then we had to write the script and cast it and draw the set and all that shit. So we did The Boy That Cried Wolf. And I remember my teacher walking up to me and asking me, because every theater program in the theater program, quote unquote, in the Midwest, there weren't enough boys. And the teacher walked up to me and asked if I would play the boy. And it's like, I'm not going to play a boy. I'm not a boy. I want to be a sheep. And then I realized incredibly quickly that I had a very small part.
You dumbass.
And they bought me this cute little costume. It was a white t-shirt with black leggings. And I got a Sharpie and I wrote the sheep one on my shirt. So everyone knew I was the most important sheep. But that was the first time that I was like, just take the biggest role, CJ.
You
take it.
You turned down the boy.
Yeah.
Of the
and
boy.
Little did
angels.
I know that I was going to be destined to play men's roles for the rest of my life.
Wow.
It was, that was my moment. That was the call to action. And I rejected it at first.
We have a little girl playing Ferdinand right now in The Tempest.
Aww.
And the way we sort of sold it was back in Shakespeare's day, women weren't allowed to perform. So now we're taking it back. And
no,
she was so pumped when we announced her part. She was like, yeah!
That's so cute. I love it.
Brand new. She's never done Shakespeare with us. So
she's wiser than I was.
Yeah, she's going to do great.
How old is she?
I think she's 10.
Wow.
Nine, maybe.
That's cool. Yeah. Good for her.
And her siblings are in it too. And her older sister is playing Trinculo, and her younger brother is playing Caliban.
Oh, nice.
So it's like six.
Oh,
wow.
Cool.
And a six year old should play Caliban.
Yeah, he's got a bit of a speech impediment, and it's really cute.
God. I can't wait to see it.
He's also the boatswain at the beginning of the storm and everything. Oh, so he's the first voice you hear, and it's great.
I love it.
Boatswain! Yeah, it's great. What else did we want? Oh, Polixenes, did we talk about the King of Bohemes? La Vie Bohème?
He sounds just like a fucking bit. Dreamboat.
Sounds kind of
hot.
Yeah,
he's just a cool, suave dude. And
Well, he doesn't always have the best judgment, but he's a dude. He's a good guy.
You know.
He does threaten his son. Then won't let him marry Pretty.
Oh, the God,
but,
that's right. That's right.
You guys are like, cool dude. I'm like, whoa.
You're right.
At first, I guess I'm thinking of the whole thing of getting accused of what he's accused of and then having his life threatened and then running for it, but then being cool with it in the end as opposed to broing down over it.
I guess
is cool. But you're right. That whole thing with his son sucks.
It's a little shitty.
Yeah, for sure. I just think the name is cool as shit. Polixenes.
Fuck any yeah. name with like an accent, it is pretty great.
Like a pet gator, pet yeah. alligator, I would name it Polixenes.
Well,
nobody gonna fuck with me then.
Florizel, but which is his son, but he pretends to be Doricles.
Right.
Doricles.
Right.
The shepherd.
You're a Doricles.
You're a Doricles. Aww. You're a Doricles.
My noble man.
You're a Dorkles. Anyway, right. Is there anything else? Should we talk about love, rebirth?
What yeah, are, I don't I mean, know. All themes. Themes.
What are the
are,
themes?
I don't
here?
Believe in love.
I think time I is a don't. Theme. Okay. I think redemption and rebirth is definitely a theme.
Renaissance.
Yeah.
I think forgiveness is a theme and
dying. Forgiveness and
yeah.
die with things newborn. Yeah.
Redemption.
Should we throw a monologue at the front of this one?
Yeah.
Sure, you can do one.
Scott, you guys want
to
do it?
I can come up with one. I just need to sit down and get one, but I'll do a Paulina monologue.
Paulina.
Thou yeah. met'st with things dying, I with things new born.
There you go. Do it.
There you go.
No. The title of the play, we haven't talked about that. The Winter's Tale.
Well, you know, which is sort of directly tied to CJ mentioned it earlier, the idea of fairy tale, that it is pastoral. It was Robert Greene's pastoral romance Appendasto, which was published in 1588. That was the inspiration for this. But it goes way off. Like, Leontes, he freaks out. I think Hermione kills herself. Mm. It's really dark. And so... I think
it's like one of the old Grimms or Hans Christian Andersen.
Right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the first part of the play is mocked by death and is sad and is winter.
Yeah.
And by the end, we're coming out of it, spring, reborn, Winter's Tale. Come, yeah, you know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. We love this play. Good play.
Yeah.
We have things we need to do, though. So is there anything else you guys want to say about this
no,
place
no. I really enjoyed rereading it, and yeah,
I'm very glad to have finally read it. It's been it was a delight.
Check it out if you haven't read it. Watch a version of it if you can find it, or go see it at your local theater if it's showing.
Hell fucking yes.
Hell to the yes.
Okay, first things first. Let's rank these motherfuckers.
Let's do it.
Bailey loves ranking shit.
Ooh. Okay.
I do. I rank. Okay. I love it. I love ranking shit. CJ.
Yeah.
You go last.
Okay. Good. I want to.
I know. I was trying to surprise you with a fun thing. You want me to go to first, Scott?
I'll go. I'm ready. Okay. This isn't what I would have predicted when we started this. So I'm gonna go. And I'll explain why in a second. I'm going to say number three, Winter's Tale.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
Number two, Cymbeline. Number one, in Measure for Measure.
Whoa. No shit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Measure for Measure is way more brilliant than I thought it was. Cymbeline, I didn't know so well. So it was great to sort of discover that and go, ooh. And then Winter's Tale, it just might have been the one that was just in my head. More, but
cool.
Next,
number three for me is Winter's Tale.
Mm-hmm.
Number two for me is Measure for Measure. Mm. Number one is Cymbeline.
Not Salome.
Cymbeline. That's my favorite.
Cymbeline.
Al Pacino. CJ, I want to hear yours, and we can discuss the differences.
Three, Measure for Measure. Ooh. Two, Winter's Tale. One, Cymbeline.
Cymbeline.
I think we were all different, right?
We were all different. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
I have to say, like, I really enjoyed this whole series, and I was surprised. Like, Measure for Measure, I was like, yeah, let's do this, because I think I'm not going to enjoy it that much. And I ended up really enjoying it. And then our discussion made it, I was like, this is a doable play. Mm. This is a play you can still actually do and have an interesting say in it. But I just, I am partial to Cymbeline. I fucking love it. And I will always love it.
Sweet.
And I
It's
a great play. I'm sad that I didn't see it either time that they did it at Shakespeare Youth Festival, and hopefully we'll do it again soon, and we can all see it.
Yeah,
hell yeah!
But these were all great. Like
these were all great plays. Shakespeare is fun.
We'll have to one day do an episode and talk about the ones that aren't great, the ones that we don't like. Yeah. You know,
well, we did Henry VI Part One.
Henry VI Part One is the shitter, right? Like, that's the super crappy one. But that was also his first, so we'll give him a little.
But it's got Joan of Arc in it.
That's true.
It has Joan of Arc in it.
I like
it
now that
I've
directed it.
Oh, shut up.
No, I like it now that I've directed it. I think it's fun. I think it's stupid, but it's fun. You guys liked it.
I very much liked the production.
It was
and,
fun.
Well,
we
and then
had
parts
great
two,
time.
It really, what you did is make it a single thing.
Right. Three plays and two and
two part and two halves, but that really helped because then you speed through the garbage that's the first one and then start to get to the meat. You know, once the roses start getting handed out, things start to get hot.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Once everybody picks a team. Once everybody
picks
their
jersey. And that's only like 25 minutes in, and then you're all right, here we go. And then it's Richard II is going to be similar, where it's like, you know, it starts hot, but then there's a lot of like, okay, who's on whose side? What's going on? And then once you realize, you're like, okay, this is
Richard too.
I love it.
I love Richard too.
Y'all love your Richard too.
I do. It's
great.
I got no judgment. It's just,
I'm a Dickie Two apologist.
Wow, that's so good.
Thanks, CJ. I'm currently directing that with children right now, but
I'm sure it's going to be fucking great. I'm
just
saying, I don't love it.
No. CJ spit in the face of young child actors because
I
do.
I mean, at this point, abuse, child abuse.
Oh my God, you guys!
I'll edit all this out.
No,
I didn't edit any of this out.
Can we triple it? Can we briefly discuss dream roles?
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh man, yeah, there's a bunch.
Dream rolls.
I basically want to do a one-person show that's all three of these plays put together.
Oh. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
No one will watch that, but that sounds great.
I don't know what's happening right now.
Maybe it'll be the new American Ramayana and everyone will want to watch it. It'll be an annual thing.
It'll be like the Rose Bowl parade. Yeah, no, I think that sounds great.
One person Rose Bowl parade.
Yeah, of Shakespeare.
But seriously, Angelo, Lucio, Pisano, Cloten, the Queen, anybody in Cymbeline, Paulina, Hermione, Camillo. Like, I'd play the kings. Like, there's a lot of great characters in these plays.
Yeah, right? I'd want to play Leontes. I would not want to play Angelo. I would want to direct Measure for Measure again because it got cut off by COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Polixenes would be fun. Mm. I love a king.
Yeah.
And then Cymbeline. I'm forgetting the dad's name. What's his name?
Cymbeline?
No,
Belarius.
Oh, sorry. No, yes, him.
The woodsy dad, Belarius.
Yeah. I want to be him.
I really want to do Angelo one day.
Yeah, I want to do Angelo and drag.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. The Duke would be fun too. The role that I will get paid for at some point.
Yeah,
that I will get paid to play is Barnard Dean, the prisoner.
Yes, you will.
The prisoner who's like, I don't give a fuck. Nope.
Oh.
I'm too drunk for you to kill me today.
Yeah. If you haven't done that in 5 years, then
yeah, like that. That's my.
We're
guy.
Not friends anymore.
And then you'll play the porter from Macbeth. It'll
yeah. I,
perfect.
Nah, I'm not gonna go get drunk, but yeah, I mean, you know, I'm horny to do some Shakespeare. It's been a bit since I've done Shakespeare, and so I would be. I'm gonna pursue that a little bit this year as part of one of my goals.
The Shakespeare Youth Festival
used to, which is how I got involved there, used to do productions of shows on the off season with adults.
Oh.
And they would sometimes, with like professional actors, which is how I got in with them. I auditioned for a show and I played Falstaff.
Oh,
and
right.
We all became friends. And then they were like, you should teach with us. And I was like, great. And so I did. But so it's like, I'm now, you know, part of those discussions. And I really want to start doing stuff like that again. So maybe at Fringe, maybe, excuse me, elsewhere. But yeah, I want to start producing some Shakespeare, because Shakespeare Youth Fest rules and I love it, but we could be doing alumni shows, we could be doing adult shows, we could have
Hell
a whole
yeah.
presence. So if y'all have a concept that's cheap and easy and fun, then let's
all right listen
put
to
me
this.
In everything that's
okay.
my concept
listen to this it's Scriker. Hamlet
oh okay
but yeah. it's set on a submarine
done
it's underwater we're underwater the whole time you can't hear sound so you
yeah.
can't hear what they're saying.
And at one point Godzilla swims by.
It's like
yeah.
We should
Godzilla
write Hamlet versus Godzilla.
Fucking terrible. Hamlet versus Godzilla. Can't wait. There is a
Stupid.
Actually I'm going to write that. But there is a new Godzilla movie, American Godzilla movie coming out with the Kong franchise,
oh,
the
it
Kong
looks
versus,
awful. I
it
saw
looks like maybe the worst thing ever, especially because one of the best Godzilla movies ever just hit theaters
yeah.
a few months ago. So it's like insane that they
Why
are doing
making
this.
So
but...
many Godzilla movies.
It's well, like... because America owns half the rights because they got it in the 90s for that Matthew Broderick movie. And so they make one every like however many years to keep the rights. But then there's a Japanese company who originated it who still has the rights, and they just make one like every 10 years or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the one that just came out was Japanese and it was beautiful. And it was very much about like the bomb and, you know, and but using Godzilla as that kind of symbol. And it's a phenomenal film. But then America's like, right, but what if he's pink now? And I'm like, no.
Don't do this.
Good so job, bad. America.
Really, really bad. There's a Kong Jr. And there's... I just can't. I'm not gonna... I'm done.
No, I'm not gonna.
But I love you guys. Let's say this and then we'll get out of here. Unless you have an LA spotlight. Does anybody have an LA spotlight?
No, not yet.
I have stuff coming up, but I'm going to hold it for
yeah,
a minute.
Come see Shakespeare Youth Fest in March at the Hudson Theater. We're in the backstage and it's going to be awesome. This season, season 5, we're ending season 4. Goodbye. We changed it up for season 4 where we were doing mostly picks. Scott's pick, Bailey's pick, CJ's pick, and then we covered a few playwrights.
Mm-hmm.
The pitch that we're hoping to do for this season in Theater Reboot is talking more about the intersection between film and theater, whether that be artists or actual shows, actual movies, actual actors, performers, whatever, directors, whatever, writers, I don't care, anything, set designers. That's going to be kind of our new trajectory. We're going to focus on those kind of things. And not to say we won't focus on maybe a playwright here and there. Maybe we'll pick some stuff that's more just theater-centric. But we'll always kind of find a lens into film, I think, as well. And the name Theater can still stick because it can be sort of like theater the art form and also like movie theaters and also like... Right? What are y'all's feelings on this? Are you cool with this? Are we happy with this?
Absolutely.
Are we like,
yeah. good. And we can always come back and revisit. And listen, we just read The Winter's Tale. Change is good.
Evolution.
Moving on
is good.
Evolution is good.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
we can still come back to Shakespeare at the end of every year if we wanted to for fun. We could do.
I think
big...
we should do the big ones. Like
yeah.
next season, like we're gonna do Hamlet, Othello, and Julius Caesar. Some
yeah.
bullshit. Some bullshit.
Exactly.
Like that.
That'd be
yeah.
fun. You know, we're theater minded first, but I think we just this is going to be the new podcast. The other side of that is we the other piece of this puzzle is that we might also be doing it every other week.
Yeah.
So you'll be getting an episode every other week, every other Sunday night it'll drop. starting beginning of February. Yes. Is that right, Scott?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think Sunday the 4th of February should be our first show.
Our first episode. We don't know what it's going to be yet, but it's going to be something great.
Keep an eye out on Instagram.
Keep an eye out on Instagram. Follow us at Theater Theater Pod. Okay. CJ?
Yeah. Do y'all have comments on what we're doing with season 5? What do you think of the problem plays? You can reach out to us via email, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Scott?
Thank you, CJ. A big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson. Ryan Thomas Johnson writes our stingers, and he writes our theme song. And, oh, fact check, our theme song is better than your fucking theme song. So stretch. And then finally, to the great award-winning playwright, Errol Pinter, who writes every single one of our episodes from heaven. And one day, Errol Pinter, we're going to buy you a beer in heaven.
I'm in heaven.
It's true. He probably won't write the next season.
No, no.
Do you think he will? I don't know.
We'll have a great new one. Maybe we should do, I don't know, we should do a woman. Well, we did Carol Churchill for a long time, so we'll figure it out.
Women have had enough.
Yeah, we've tipped the hat, you know what I'm saying? No, I say more women.
Let's do it.
If only the woodpecker sang. The bark on the tree was as name the movie.
I don't know what this...
I'll give you some holes.
Hey.
Jesus Christ. Later, everybody.
The theater. The theater.
Theater. To me.